Sustainability. Now that's a term that's seeped into our vocabulary, but what does it really mean? There probably isn't a farmer in the country who wouldn't agree that it's something to aim at, but what exactly is the target? There's a saying, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. So how can you measure sustainability? What are the indicators to tell the farmer, or anyone else for that matter, how the land, like where I'm standing now, on the west coast of England in the Wirral, is being managed? There's a pilot checklist of indicators drawn up by DEFRA for sustainable agriculture. They're divided into five groups, and there are some 35 in total, ranging right from the economic viability of farming to input use and biodiversity. And although they're principally policy tools, perhaps they will act as signposts to where farming is heading. In the next half hour, we'll be hearing from farmers in three different parts of Britain to find out what these indicators might mean to their businesses. After each of these three case studies, we'll be asking others to give their reaction and share their thoughts on the issues raised, and you'll meet them all later. But with me now, in this silage pit that's filled with straw on this farm in the Wirral, is Mark Tripney, who manages this farm and four others for the Leverhulme estate. And Mark, is sustainability important to you?
Very much so. It's important to this business. We have been through a period of rationalisation because we want to stay in farming. We've looked at the detail and looked at what we do on the farms, and we want to continue farming. Therefore, using indicators is vitally important to the farm and where we're going.
Well, we'll be hearing more from Mark and indeed those other farmers I mentioned in other parts of the country a little later. But before that, a brief word from DEFRA, from Lord Whitty. Sustainability isn't just an important issue on farm, it matters to government and the public as a whole.
The indicators on sustainability are to demonstrate the ability of agriculture to meet environmental objectives. The impact on the environment is an important part of how modern agriculture should operate, and sometimes we call this resource productivity. So it's basically about combining economic growth whilst at the same time protecting the environment. And use of those indicators will help farmers to help themselves. So they'll be able to compare themselves with other farms in the same sector, in the same area. It's always good business practice to make these kinds of comparisons. It can show where there are unnecessary costs, so it's good from both an environmental and a business point of view.
Now, the University of Hertfordshire and the organisation LEAF, that stands for Linking Environment and Farming, are working on behalf of DEFRA to raise farmers' awareness of these indicators, and this audio cassette programme is all a part of that. But from initial contact with farmers, farmers are actually saying, well, are these the right indicators to measure how we're performing?
They give us a good start, and they're devised to provide information on farm management systems, on inputs, on resource use, on the conservation benefits, and on effectively the farm's relative performance. So they represent the best available data for the moment. They will, of course, be reviewed and improved as knowledge improves. We've taken the lead here in Europe and elsewhere in developing these indicators, and we will hopefully bring Europe along with us because we've taken the initiative in this regard.
But what about all the other European countries? Because, as you've said, that Britain is taking the lead, but if they don't do the same sort of thing and quickly, couldn't British farming be a little bit disadvantaged by having to perhaps use these indicators, make changes accordingly when our competitors in Europe are not doing the same?
Quite the opposite. All countries are working on indicators throughout Europe and more widely. And the indicators shouldn't be seen as a burden. The growing demand for agro-environmental information is because of the higher priority that is being put by governments across the world on this. The Rio Agreement, for example, requires us to develop indicators to measure progress in reaching what the sustainable development targets to which we're committed. So this is a way of ensuring that the UK can show that we are meeting the commitments that we have made. Other countries have made the same commitments, and within the EU, we are leading the way, and other countries in Europe will, following what will eventually be a European system, but will be very much influenced by the British input. So I don't think we're disadvantaged, we're ahead of the game.
So that's the context. As I mentioned earlier, there are five groups of indicators for sustainable agriculture, covering every aspect of the farm and its place in the countryside. I'm here at one of the Leverhulme farms, just outside Liverpool, because I'm curious to see how Mark Tripney sees the relevance of these indicators to his business. Mark, first of all, you better give us an overview of what the business is. We've got some lovely Guernsey cows just the other side of this silage wall and some black and whites a little bit further away. So dairying's important?
Dairying is three quarters of our business. We milk some 480 cows when in full milk. So we're producing somewhere in the region of 3.5 million litres of milk a year. So we've got some fairly respectable yields from the cows. We also rear all our own young stock, as you've seen on the farm today here, and have quite a large arable enterprise, stretching to some 300 hectares in all, including maize, wheat, and a little bit of barley.
Taking the group of indicators that look at the use of inputs, there's 11 indicators, and if I flick through the manual here, they cover the quantity of pesticide active ingredient, the spray area treated with pesticide, right through to manure management, ammonia emissions. Mark, what's your standpoint on these types of issues?
I think what is useful is that it looks at detail, and I think that is key to any business. Attention to detail is a phrase that is bandied about, but I think that it's extremely important. Before anything is put on the land, we make sure our equipment is accurate, whether it be the drill or whether it be the fertiliser spreader or even the sprayer. We calibrate the machines and put on precisely what we want. And I think it's vital to show that we are doing this. And I think this is what some of the indicators are actually trying to look at.
Can you give an example of your attention to detail with the livestock? I mean, they're very quiet at the moment, just the other side of this silage wall, but we can't forget them.
With the cows, in particular the milking cows, it's important that they get the right diet. So we look at weighing out accurate amounts of feed and mixing that with accurate amounts of protein balancer to achieve yield, butterfat, protein, whatever. But also we have to meet the quality standards as well.
From what you've said, you've given two good reasons for this attention to detail, profitability and also to achieve the highest quality. But what about some of the wider benefits as well? Environmentally, does it improve the way that your farm is a part of the wider environment?
If we can maintain a profitable farming business with attention to detail, it benefits the local environment in particular in that it preserves and hopefully improves what we've already got here. We have a tremendous amount of bird life and wildlife, and we're only 5 miles from inner city Birkenhead. This is what sustainability is about. It's about looking at the businesses we've got and trying to improve them. That attention to detail does mean some very difficult decisions.
Can you give me some examples of a particular action that you're now having to take on farm as a result of looking particularly carefully at one aspect of input use?
One area that I think could be important to our farming is the use of the manures that we get from the cows. They're what I see as the interaction between the animals and the crop. We have a very simple rotation in that it's two wheats followed by a maize. Before we plough for maize, we use the manures from the cows and the young stock. I have analysed the manures that we have on the farms, and now that we have that analysis, we can actually apply these manures accurately and know what benefit which particular type of manure, whether it's strawy muck or slurry, is going to actually have for the crop.
Now, to people who might be listening that will be thinking, you know, I'm not sure that I want to go to the trouble of analysing every aspect of my farm, let alone look at the full range of indicators for sustainable agriculture, what do you say to them?
If you're happy where you are and you don't think you've got to improve, well, maybe you don't need to analyse, but I would argue that everybody needs to step back and actually look at what they're doing. It is a mindset. You have to want to look at the detail, but it is time well spent.
Mark Tripney speaking to me on his farm in the Wirral. In the studio now, and listening very carefully to everything Mark had to say, I'm joined by two farmers. There's Chris Peachey, who farms 800 acres organically in Wiltshire, and Julian Hazler, who has an 800-acre arable farm near Tetbury in Gloucestershire. And there's also Andrew Green from the Agriculture and Environment Research Unit at the University of Hertfordshire. Now, turning to the two farmers here first, we just heard Mark Tripney not sounding the least bit daunted by the pilot set of indicators as such. Now, I know not all farmers feel this positively about them. Chris, first, what about you?
Even the worst, most arrogant farmer must want to hand his land on in better condition than he had it. And that's the whole thing that drives us apart from money. So, yes, anything that can help you to do that better must be good. You've got to start from somewhere.
Julian, turning to you, this set of indicators, 35 or more of them, just about every facet of farming, it's very complicated, or do they just reflect how complex running a farm business is?
Yes, that is part of it. It's interesting also that there's been this mention already about impacts, less impacts on the environment, and it's very difficult to farm without making impacts on the environment. The trick is, what is the best way of doing that without endangering the whole farm system?
We'll discuss more about that later on. But if I can turn now to you, Andrew Green, from the University of Hertfordshire. You've been involved in actually assessing these indicators. What is the science behind them, the starting point, if you like, that DEFRA's chosen? I mean, is the data meaningful?
Generally speaking, the data is meaningful, albeit that it's been collected over many years for a whole range of different purposes. So obviously it wasn't collected just for this project. But nevertheless, there's sufficient detail in there for us to be able to say something about the status of British agriculture, its role in society, the way it may be going in the future, and hopefully steer that future into the direction we want it to go.
I've heard some sort of criticism, though, that perhaps some of the data is a little bit old, or it needs updating, or certain aspects have been missing. I mean, is there going to be a chance for more accurate information to be included?
Certainly. I mean, the paper version of the indicators booklet was produced 2 years ago now. So obviously some of the data in there is now getting a bit out of date, but the data is still being collected. And in the work we're doing and in the work that's going to be done in the future, that newer data will be included and will be continually updated again.
Back to farmers Chris Peachey and Julian Hazler, do you feel that this is being sort of put in front of you as a carrot, if you like, in order to improve your farming practice, or do you feel that it's a stick being held over your head?
I personally think it's more of a stick than a carrot, but I'm not sure.
I hadn't even heard about these guidelines until I went to a local meeting.
So carrot or stick to you?
Oh, I think a bit of both. I think more carrot, actually.
Andrew, do you think that these indicators are meant just for farmers, like the two that have joined us at the table here?
No, they're not. I mean, clearly the farmers are going to find them very interesting and very relevant to their businesses. But they're also important policy tools that politicians, environmentalists and a whole range of other groups are going to use to argue their case, whether it be at home, in Europe or internationally. And therefore, it's important that these indicators are taken seriously and are looked at to make sure that the businesses are showing the good things that they're doing and showing equally the things that they're doing about the problems that are facing agriculture at the moment.
Well, thank you for the points that you've raised so far, and we'll come back to all three of you for more after we've heard from the second farm. Another set of indicators in DEFRA's pilot means of measuring the sustainability of UK farming relate to farm management, measuring how many farmers are changing to alternative management systems, converting to organic, or the other way is adopting integrated farm management, or IFM. And the farm that we hear from now has taken up both and runs the two systems side by side. Well, now I've come to a very different farm in a very different landscape. In fact, in the thick early morning fog, it's not very easy to see much of the landscape at all. But I'm just south of Cambridge, not far from the Imperial War Museum at Duxford, and I'm standing in a very busy farmyard with all sorts of loading, with forklifts, lorries waiting. This is Russell Smith Farms, and I'm here with the manager, Andrew Nottage.
Good morning, Susie.
This is a typical busy morning, is it?
It's a very typical busy morning. We've got potatoes going out to one of our local processing people at the moment. We've changed considerably in the last 10 years. We've gone from a farm predominantly growing cereal crops, combinable crops, into one growing high-quality vegetables for supermarket use. We've become very market-led and focused in what we grow. Our staffing numbers have changed considerably, and our farm management skills have had to change considerably to meet those aims as well.
So how are you fine-tuning your farm management?
One of the things we do on an annual basis, we're a member of an organisation called LEAF, and obviously the LEAF audit is very important. It makes us think about what we're doing and give us aims and objectives to try and improve the way we run the farm.
Can I come and have a look at that in process?
By all means, yeah, come in now.
And as we make our way to the farm office, this brings us to the end of side one of this cassette. So do join us again on side two to hear how Andrew Nottage's choice of management system is helping him to plan, evaluate and improve his farming practices. So here we are in the office.
Welcome to one of the places where I spend most of my time these days. It's a 1,000-acre farm which I run. We do rent some land in on an annual basis, maybe 1,200 acres in some years. Sustainability is very important to us because obviously, all right, okay, we can grow crops for supermarket use, but if we exhaust the land, we get all sorts of problems and the whole business is not sustainable and the business will fold in time. It's very important. Another management challenge which we have on the farm and which I have to be aware of and adapt my management skills to is organic farming. About 10% of the farm is organic at present. And I can bring an integrated farm management concept into the organic side of the farm as well. So it's not just about integrated farming. I'm using those techniques now within my organic enterprises on the farm. It's very important.
So what are the factors that you'd pay closest attention to?
We're looking at four or five main areas: soil, water, air and our wildlife habitats. And they're all covered within the LEAF audit. LEAF stands for Linking the Environment and Farming. We've been members of LEAF since 1994. It's very easy on a farm like this to get terribly wrapped up in the day-to-day running of the farm and not actually think what we're doing and where we're going. And being a member of something like LEAF gives us that, and it is becoming recognised by our customers now. If you like, we can perhaps have a look at some of these aspects in the audit.
Yeah, pull it up on screen.
Okay. This is the audit which I have on disk. We're looking at the soil management section at the moment. Just for example, one of the things I've looked at this year as well, I'd like to improve is our assessment of field conditions when we're carrying out cultivations on the farm. Are we always in the field at the right time of the year, doing the right machine in the right soil conditions, or are we perhaps better off holding on a couple of days or using a different machinery? At the end of the section, we've got targets for action. I've got three of my targets here for 2002 as such. I'm looking at nitrates really predominantly in these targets. I've got two here. My first one is I want to test the surface water for nitrates, and also I want to test my soil nitrate levels. We're on very light land in this area and I'm conscious that we might be getting some nitrate leaching, but unless I measure those, I won't know how much we've got or how serious it is.
So it's all about measuring up what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And then making an assessment and then deciding, right, well, my target now is...
Definitely.
And then making a change, a plan... For the future?
Yeah, there's always improvements. And if we've got ourselves a target, we can look back at the next year when we do it and have we done anything about it? No, well, we need to get on and do something.
Now, I know we've got fog outside the window, but many farmers may feel they're in a bit of a fog themselves at the moment and don't know which way to go. Do you feel that you've discovered a sense of direction, really, in what you're trying to achieve with the 1,000 acres in your care?
I think we have. Farmers in quite a difficult time at the moment. We've got to remember there aren't real opportunities out there and we've got to try and address those issues. And integrated farm management is a real tool which we can use to really improve the image of the farming industry and promote ourselves and become real ambassadors. If we can make the consumer aware of that, then we've really got a chance of progressing on in the future.
Back in the studio now, I still have with me farmers Julian Hazler and Chris Peachy and Andrew Green from the University of Hertfordshire. So what have you thought of what Andrew Nottage had to say just there? He's got two different systems on the farm, one IFM and one organic, running side by side, and he says the one learning from the other. Julian, you practice integrated farm management. Chris, you're the organic farmer. How do you feel? Side by side?
Yes, each has got different things to offer. There are times when being able to use a pesticide is in fact better for the environment than some of the organic techniques, but there are times when organic techniques by themselves will be better.
Chris, you were nodding at the suggestion that using a pesticide might be a better alternative for the environment than the organic alternative.
Yeah, I'd love to have be able to use Roundup, for instance, because cooch is my big worry. I can see getting into a real muddle with cooch in the future. Just a quick slap would be wonderful. The alternative is to spend days of bastard fallowing, ploughing up and down with a tractor. Not good for the environment.
So do you see that there are a lot of techniques that are, in fact, though, common to both systems, organic and IFM? Julian?
Oh, yes. Yes, there are. Organic farming can teach us to observe better, I think, what is going on the farm.
It's a different mindset completely, organic farming.
And do you feel that you can learn from IFM principles, the kind of principles that Julian would use?
Yeah, because nobody in their right minds are going to use more inputs than they need to, especially not in today's economic climate.
I'd like to add there that the codes of good agricultural practice are a sound basis on which to set off in a direction towards sustainable agriculture, whether it be organic or IFM or conventional. They provide common sense rules of thumb, which not only help the environment, but are likely to help farm businesses minimise costs by reducing imports and that kind of thing. So they're a good first step, certainly.
And whatever the system, good management will deliver good food without harming the environment.
That's quite right. I mean, it's good management that is key to this, really. It doesn't matter whether it's good organic or good IFM or good conventional management.
Can I introduce another question here to the three of you? When you look at the indicators, I mean, do you really see that there's any substance in them that could actually make you think, wow, these may help me to farm better?
The main thing is to make you think. I farmed for 20 years without even thinking what I was doing. I was just head down, produce as much milk as possible. And something that brings you up with a jolt and actually makes you think what you're doing and ask yourself why you're doing it the way you are doing it, I'm sure it's beneficial.
Yes, some of these ones on input use, the pesticides in the rivers, pesticides in groundwater, I think these are important aspects that farmers have got to consider very seriously.
And what about consumer concerns?
You can't listen to the radio nowadays without being aware of it.
Certainly. I mean, it's important, really, that not only are farmers looking at these indicators and seeing where they fit into the bigger picture and how they're impacting on the indicators or vice versa, but also that these are an opportunity for agriculture generally to show the way it's working has changed and is continuing to change and will continue to change into the future in response not only to economic pressures but also the requirements of society as a whole. And this is a great opportunity for farming to show the good things that it's doing.
If I can stay with you, Andrew, at the moment, for farmers listening or agronomists or others involved with agriculture who are interested in actually using the indicators, what are the tools they can use to interpret their relevance?
We've come up with a software package on CD-ROM, which will enable a user to sit down and see how they fit into the bigger picture.
So put in some details about their farm, their land, or the land that they're managing.
Exactly. And then they can compare with their regional or county averages and say, OK, I'm good on this one, I'm bad on that one, what's going on here? And make some judgments about their own performance and their own businesses in light of what they know about their local environment and their local communities. But there's also simpler systems, including a website relating to the indicators, other sources of information, different organisations you can contact to get more information and get sound advice.
And the web addresses, you can actually find those on the inlay card that goes with this cassette. Well, let's move on now again, this time to an 1,800-acre family farm just outside Doncaster to meet Tony Cook, who's been checking how his farm business measures up against another of the five sets of indicators. And this is the group called the Conservation Value of Agricultural Land. Well, we parked the truck up at the top of the hill and then we've walked down, actually along the field margin, down the slope of the field, and there's two riders that are just coming out on their horses from an equestrian centre over the way there. But Tony, why have you brought me to this particular part of the farm?
It's about a 3/4 acre pond, which we created 2 years ago to encourage colonisation of it from the surrounding wetland.
And just over the other side there's an embankment, and that's the railway line, is it?
We might even get a train going. There's the main Leeds-Doncaster line there, and also a disused railway line which used to serve the adjacent colliery when that was open.
Are we on the edge of Moorhouse Grange?
Not quite, no. We are at this boundary, but it extends some way over to our left. But we're looking out across a field of wheat, and you see where we're actually standing here. At the bottom of the slope of that wheat is an area of permanent set-aside and a field margin, which we've created here to create some sort of buffer between the crop and the habitat. So we're hopefully going to create quite an undisturbed habitat.
Now, the whole point, though, about a pond like this one is, yes, it looks nice, but what difference has it actually made to the wildlife that live on this farm? Can you quantify it?
We've got the RSPB involved with their Volunteer and Farming Alliance.
So it's going to be you with a pair of binoculars and
I'm not an expert switcher, you know. So we've got the right people in with the right skills to do the job properly. And they came up with an extremely good report on the farm.
So you're quite excited at what they did find? I mean, was it a surprise?
I was quite surprised by some of the things I found. I didn't expect to find reed buntings on the farm, but we've actually got three pairs that are territorial around this particular pond. Overall, there was 110 species adjacent to the railway line, and out on the open farmland there was 53 species. We got them in as soon as we could at the start of all these improvements being made to the farm in terms of habitat provision. So we had a baseline, so we knew where we were starting from, and the intention is to go back, if not every year, but every other year, and redo the survey so we can actually quantify the improvements that are taking place.
But when you look at the indicators for sustainability and in the section that is to do with conservation on farm, as well as sort of categorising, you know, how much work farmers have done, there are some quite specific targets of how many more thousands of hectares of field margins that Britain wants to see on farm, how many more miles of species-rich hedgerow. Yeah. So, I mean, how do you feel? Do you sort of think, well, come on, I've done my bit now, perhaps you feel you've done enough?
You could understand people feeling that way, but you've got to remember where the government's coming from with the indicators. I can't see a problem with that. I don't feel particularly threatened by it. I think as a government, they've got to have some way of measuring success or failure of a policy. And it's a statement of intent, if you like.
But as the next generation to enter the family farming business, and now with a son of your own and twins on the way, you've also got to be thinking about profitability.
Unless a farm is profitable, it is never going to be sustainable. Everyone would agree with that. So fundamentally, the foundation stone of sustainability has to be profitable, viable agriculture, and then use that as a springboard to do what else you want to do with the farm and provide what else society wants us to provide. And there's no reason at all to feel as though we are being singled out as an industry, because we're not.
Other industries are going to have to do
absolutely. The interesting lesson is that other industries are taking them on board and embracing them and actually using them as a marketing tool to gain advantage over competitors. So we could take a leaf out of their book and perhaps use it as a way of getting the shopper out there to buy UK food rather than buying imports, perhaps.
Tony Cook making the clear link there between profitability and sustainability in agriculture. Now, Chris and Julian, you both smiled and nodded when he made that point, something obviously that you agree with.
Absolutely. If there isn't profitability, then there won't be sustainable agriculture because there won't be agriculture.
Most of the conservation carrots aren't fully self-funding. You get, say, 50% or 60% of what the actual cost, and you have to provide the other 40%. So, again, without the profit, it won't happen.
And I'm sure that's something that a lot of people listening will agree with. But something they mightn't agree with, and Andrew Green, I'll turn to you with this, that they may not agree with the fact that they just chose to count birds again in terms of measuring the conservation value of agricultural land.
That's true, but birds have been included because data is widely available on birds. They are relatively easy to identify in comparison with some of the other species that are out there. And because they provide a signpost for what might be going on lower down the food chain. So although it's only one of the numerous species groups that we could be looking at in the environment, it is an important one because of the amount of data out there and because we've got the records with which we can compare the future and the performance.
So birds are in for a good reason. Now, Andrew, another thing, though, is do you think that the indicators are actually going to change? Are they set in stone?
There is a review planned by DEFRA for 2003, and this is very much a pilot set of indicators. So certainly any feedback from farmers or other groups of society is welcomed in trying to target these better in future and identify if or where there are gaps.
Well, let's ask the two farmers that are with us now, Julian and Chris, are there any omissions that you see in the indicators as they're drawn up so far?
I think it would be nice if we had more measurement of outputs, what agriculture produces, not just food. We have a role to play in the environment. In some ways, we might be regarded as being part of the problem, but we're also part of the solution.
Chris, do you want to add to that?
What can I say? I mean, he's absolutely right. Everybody I know has been far more responsible lately, and I think it's a good news story.
Andrew Green, if they've got suggestions of other things that should be included in the indicators, what do they do with them?
Basically, we can be contacted either by email via the website or indeed by post. Those suggestions will be posted on the website and indeed passed on to DEFRA, ready for the review in 2003.
So if I can turn back to you now, all of you as a group, some final thoughts about these pilot set of indicators. You've been quite positive about them as a starting point, perhaps. Do you see that they're going to be taken up by farmers and used by farmers to assess what they're doing on the land?
I'm quite excited by the prospect of having an opportunity to actually influence government policy. Fantastic.
Yes, I think they will be used. Pesticide usage is under quite a lot of pressure. The NVZs that are now coming up will make us look very hard at manure management and nitrate inputs. So there will be a cross-fertilisation between sustainability and other factors.
I think these are a wonderful opportunity for farming to actually sing its own praises for once and actually get across to a wider audience the wonderful things that farming's doing for the nation as a whole, whether it be the environment, rural communities, or what have you. And this is an opportunity for us to show how farming is performing in comparison with other industries and quantify what we've been saying for years, that farming is actually of great benefit to the society of Great Britain.
And that point will have to end. But my thanks to all of you in the studio here, Andrew Green, Chris Peachy and Julian Hazler, and also to the farmers, Mark Tripney, Andrew Nottage and Tony Cook, who shared something of their search for sustainability. And we all hope that it's helped you with yours.